You're listening to a Radio 191 FM podcast.
I'm here with the DPAG late breakfast interview with Rhys King and Nick
Austin.
So sorry.
Morena.
Rhys has an exhibition on at the Hocken Library that started recently called OG and the Manaya. And Nick is the curator, art curator.
Yep, I am the acting curator, art curator, curator art at the Hocken till October this year.
Fantastic. So start with Rhys. Talk me through where art started for you then. I wasn't, because we were going to ask the general what's the exhibition about, but let's start from the start. Where did art start for you?
I think art wasn't really a thing for like much of my like early life. It was never really art, it was just creativity, making stuff in general, hanging out and making stuff with my hands. And then maybe art got introduced actually in primary school. I came second place in a portrait award and
stoked a fire.
Yeah, and then that wasn't really art. And then maybe when I got to high school and I was in the actual painting class is when the idea of art came to me, and I was given art books and painting books. And yeah, I remember that we'd always be given tasks to do, and then I would always do something different, and then the teacher would be like, oh, it's really good, and all the other students would be like, but he didn't do what you told us to do, and the teacher would be like, that's the point. And then and I remember you could do those folio boards. I'd end up doing other people's boards for like a sausage roll and whatever. And it was never really, I never had to thought about it, but for everyone else in the class, it was really quite a major thing to come up with an idea and draw or paint about it. And I could pick up on theirs and do theirs. I could do mine. And from then it's felt like the most natural thing. So I've just kept at it, really.
So I guess from there, the question does naturally follow on. Where did the sort of folio board for this exhibition start? When did you start doing this style of work?
I think this folio board started from my high school folio boards, and it's all just been developing from there, and sort of like an endless stream of making, and one painting leads to the next, and then a show leads to the next. And but specifically this show started the start of last year when I moved down to Dunedin for as a Francis Hodgkins
Fellowship.
And that's where I sort of, it's never really thinking, like I don't really work in making shows, I sort of just paint and make and create, whether that be painting, drawing, music or anything. I just keep making, and then the deadline of the show comes and I put stuff together. And then the meaning sort of grows from that, rather than come up with an idea first and then make work from that.
Well, that follows well into something I wanted to ask, because I just very recently saw the exhibition for the people. We said this earlier, but for the people at home, I just went and saw it. And one of the things that jumped to mind, because it's, you called it figurative.
Yep.
It's very, like, you can look at pictures online if you go on the Hocken website for the people at home, but it's very, a lot of shapes, kind of fractal in its way, a lot of sort of silhouettes, a lot of, I don't want to say abstract, but symbols that you could interpret. Very openly and very loosely.
Yep.
But then all the pictures have names, and they're all sort of, there is, like, when you put the name together with the image, you can make a meaning out of it as an observer, as a person visiting the exhibition.
Yep.
Do the names come in sort of midway through the painting, or do they come after, or are they ever beforehand?
Usually they'll come in. Me as the viewer will come up with a name afterwards looking at it.
Sure.
Sometimes I'll come up with an idea halfway through and I might kind of stick a post-it note to the side of the painting and it's like a potential idea, and sometimes they'll carry on the whole way through, but usually it's an afterthought, or in retrospect I'll look at it as a viewer, not as a painter, and sort of see something that's not so definable or literal that it becomes the meaning of the painting, but just loose enough that it could sort of still be quite open. And the interpretation.
So does the painting process then, is it very out of body almost for you?
When a painting's good, it is.
Yeah.
I feel like when I'm, if I'm thinking about it, it's not that good. But I've got to sort of get to that state of where it's not really me painting for the good painting to happen. Yeah.
And some of them, one of the big things that struck me when I went is some of these are massive. Like some of these are sort of almost 3x4 meter canvases. What's the studio like when you're painting on canvases that big?
It fluctuates between total mess. You can't, like, paintings on the floor, paintings on all the walls, drawings on every area.
Sure.
So you can't see anything. But then I'll maybe every 3 months, maybe with the season, I'll clean it all up and put everything away and start again. But yeah, the studio is, I think one of the paintings, the Diptych Great Hall, is 8 meters long. But that was the size, pretty much the exact size of the wall in the studio, and I tried to...
I was going to ask Nick then as well, what's it like having paintings of this size as part of the exhibition, bringing them in? Is it a logistical problem all of a sudden, or is it...
Well, just on the subject of the painting you mentioned, Reece, the Great Hall, that's a coinkydink, isn't it? That the wall in the studio is pretty much the same proportions as the wall on the gallery that it's hung on. It's perfect. It's perfectly installed. I think the install of the show was historically easy. It's never been in my... I've been a part of installs for a few years, and I think the show has never gone up quicker, faster, in spite of the work's size.
I've done a lot of, I think I've installed maybe 300 or so shows, not my own, but other people's, and often my galleries would call me in as like damage control.
Sure.
Like, do it, and then I'd come in and be like, okay, that goes there, goes there, goes there. But it's sort of just allowing the work to hang itself. Like, you usually put the paintings, the main ones, the 8 meter one on the 8 meter wall, it's the only place it can fit. And then instead of trying to have these preconceived notions about where I should hang things or things or groupings together, I don't try not to do that. Instead, I let the work sort of start the layout, and then it's all pretty easy from there. And they've all got to talk to each other, usually through colour.
Yep. That was one thing that crossed my mind when I was looking at some of the... There's a lot there that are blue, the blue ink ones that are very... I think there's about four in there that are those similar sized canvases, blue ink, almost monochromatic blue. And they're sort of dotted around. They're spaced around quite nicely where it's like they don't all overwhelm each other, but you can see, you go, oh, I saw that other one that was there, and there's one over here like that, and now I'm connecting those two together in my head.
Yep.
And I wanted to know, were those all painted around the same time, or is it just a colour you like to go back to? It's almost like tattoo-y.
Yeah.
Almost.
Yeah, they're all painted in maybe a 2 week span, or maybe to 10 or so. And I try to, it's usually I move quite quick into a painting, and then the next one I'll try and make it different, or get, I always try and get to the same thing, like a resolved compositional painting that has the presence. But I usually try and get there in a different way each time. But for the blue ones, I set myself a challenge to do the same thing for 2 weeks. I'll do the same thing for at least a series of 10.
Sure.
And that was the sort of the story behind those ones. And I quite like something about the blue glows, and it's like almost feels like a screen. And
yeah, it has like a blur almost. Like I was trying to look at whether they were like lighted from behind or something, but I think it's just the quality.
They just look like that.
And there's a haze with the spray, eh? Because they spray, they're sprayed, aren't they? Mm.
I tried other colours and they didn't really work nowhere near as much. But yeah, something about that blue is really nice.
So you mentioned it just there. What are the materials? Just give us a rundown of like the paint. So the canvases are...
They are drop sheets from Bunnings, which is a lot cheaper than artist canvas.
Exactly.
And not exactly the same, but probably more durable. It doesn't rip as easy. And the rest, there's a few paperworks, and all the one smaller works on canvas are on drop sheet as well.
And the paints are just acrylic. Are they spray paints or are they?
I've got ink for this spray. It's like a fluid acrylic borderline ink. And got a bunch of, yeah, acrylic tubes, but mostly house paint, off tints, and quite like the idea of not really picking colours, but like, no, you walk around Dunedin, there's so many, like, painted over graffiti, and houses are all sort of mismatched, and people have redone their houses and tried to pick the colours, and some work and some don't. And
sure, yeah.
Try to have that sort of vibe.
Well, there's some, because the ones that are coloured, like the one we were talking about, the Great Wall, Great Hall, sorry. but it's the sort of back wall piece of the whole thing when you go, and it is the most colourful, I would say, of the paintings in there, almost. Yep. And it does have this really cool, like you say, very Dunedin-ish quality of, like, there's a red and then there's a green that sort of doesn't necessarily go with the red. And
yeah,
it really drags your eye around, and it's really intriguing to sort of... Normally I'm really, like, an obsessive viewer of art, where I'm, like, trying to really scrutinize every detail, and I don't, like, do the... let your eyes relax a bit and find what they like in the picture. But this one really made me do that, where it was like, just sort of step back, look, scan, and your brain will be like, well, that bit's interesting.
Mm.
Well, I meant to see it today as well, again, actually. And yeah, just sitting down in the chairs and looking, thinking about the colours of Dunedin again, like looking at a hill and all the houses, they sort of... they're not there on purpose or anything, and they're not set up to look any way, but they all work. Like, I definitely try and have no clashes or have anything out compositionally, anything. There can't be an area overpowering another area, or there can't be any too literal meaning that would come forth and divert your eye too much. It's all got to be like a hillside of houses, sort of. Like, compositionally just works, but I suppose unless you've got a big skyscraper, but I suppose I take out anything that is intrusive. And
well, there was one that I thought had more of a central figure than most. It was he the conductor, or is he the that had a very central man, you know, for male,
the astronaut. Are you talking about the astronaut?
Yeah,
for me at least, that's the work that is the most humanly figurative.
I think there was two. I think it was the astronaut and the conductor.
Yes.
Are both,
yes.
They both sort of got a central, just a figure, you know, not a lot to go off or anything. But do you like putting, did you start with that when you did those ones, or does it just come in?
I never start with a figure. I always put down layers until the figure or the presence or the entity comes out. And then usually happens when I flip the canvas around and I'm like, oh, there's a person there and they're doing this. And then the painting sort of becomes about painting the rest of the world in for it, to make this figure feel comfortable, like a safe space for this figure that's all of a sudden presented itself.
Sure. Yeah. It is like, if you're thinking about going, I think it is a great one to go. Maybe just take some earphones with you and just sit on the chairs and like take your time to observe them, because it's like it can sort of move.
Yep.
In front of you a bit when you let your eyes go over it. They're really cool. I loved the fossil one as well, the mostly black and white, that one. And it's definitely got a whale in the, well, a tail, you know, this is a sea creature of some variety in there.
Yep.
But beyond that, your mind can go wild with what the fossils are in there.
I like to think of, but more recently I've been thinking of each painting as like an end of your bed painting, or a painting you could live with and every day look at and have like a discussion with, and it'll be interesting. It'll be like, rather than a flatmate that's repetitive and
absolutely
has the same sort of.
No, I get that. I thought that when I was in there, I was like, these would be good to hang in your house because you wouldn't get bored of them quickly. You know, like if you go for some classical portraiture or landscape, you know, you've seen it a million times, and you're like, well, I could move it on. You know, I could do it with another one of these. And, but no, I agree. They would be great
roommates.
Yeah. And you mentioned Francis Hodgkin's Fellow from 2025. We didn't have one this year for 2026, but Grant has seen fit to bring it back this 2027. Good news, Nick?
That's great. Yeah, I think it's a relief, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a relief.
Nick was also a fellowship, Francis Hoskins fellowship person.
I did, yes, that's what brought me down to Dunedin in 2012. So I've been there, done that.
Yeah, well, that's why we need it, right?
Yeah.
It brought both of you to Dunedin.
That's right, and I think that's I'm sure I'm not the first person to have made such a point, but, you know, an unforeseen benefit to the fellowship for the city is that sometimes the fellows stick around, you know, and so there's this whole kind of other layer of activity in the mix and the soup that just wouldn't be here. I would never have come to Dunedin. It felt like when I moved here, it felt like I was being led in on a secret.
Sure.
And the best secret.
It is a fantastic arts community, you know, visual arts as well as music, as well as theatre arts to an extent. We're a little bit lacking on that one. But, you know, there is an amazing arts community here. But like you say, it's almost tucked away and we don't necessarily broadcast it to the world super loudly.
And there's pros and cons to that, isn't there?
Yeah, you know. I mean, best kept secret. There's pros to the, I would say there's pros to the creative process of keeping it a secret.
Yeah.
There's not necessarily pros to the finances of keeping it too much
Indeed.
Of a secret.
And absolutely.
People don't need to eat.
Absolutely.
Which helps. And the fellowship, again, fantastic.
Yeah, and it's the best, it's the best residency in the country, I think.
Yeah, easy.
Really?
Most are 3 months, which is enough time to set up your studio and start. And
it's quite outcome driven, I think. You know, a shorter residency.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to do this. Whereas I think, and obviously, you've got to make a pitch when you apply for the fellowship, but it's very
controlling.
There's no real obligation.
Just do your thing.
Just do your thing. Have a show at the Hocken. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And it is a beautiful space for showing things. Robin, who emailed me about this, I talked to her about A Different Light last year, which I told you guys about before we got on the mic. But it is. It's strange how different the space feels with the two different works in it. It's a great sort of, you know, gallery space. I love the side rooms because they feel like there's a good sort of breaking up of the... You don't look at everything as soon as you come in. There's some sort of secrets off to the side.
Yeah.
I thought it was fantastic use of the space.
Totally.
As well.
Thanks.
So people should absolutely get along because, you know, it takes half an hour out of your day. It's near campus. You can walk down really easily. For anyone who doesn't know, it's sort of across the road from Emerson's would be a good sort of landmark
combo
point.
There.
Yeah, exactly.
And you really got to see the paintings, like the images aren't...
For sure, yeah.
Yeah, like I always am not sure about a painting and I look at it on my phone and I'm like, oh, I'm not sure about that. And I go to paint over it or look at it in the gallery and I'm like, oh, this is, you're good.
Nick said when he sent me the images that even when you blow them up, don't do it justice. And that is true. There's just something about, there's a very 3D quality to a lot of the images where they sort of feel like layered. I had to look quite closely at some parts of them to see like, is that a hole?
Yeah.
You know, is that like actually like a multiple layers of text? You know, like is there another canvas behind that? Yeah. And it's not. It's just very good use of depth, which doesn't come across on a digital image.
Sort of like you're saying before, like the aura of an artwork. Like, you don't get that unless you're standing in front of it.
No, absolutely. And you know, people often think that that's wanky, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
But I'll be real with the people at home. I'm a bit of a skeptic most of the time. People would see me as a bit of a, he's not got a lot of whimsy in his life. But every time I go to a gallery exhibition, I'm like standing there like Cameron from Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Where I'm just like absorbed by the image. I'm like, this is changing my life. And again, happened today. Going alone, they're a fantastic thing if you've just got time to yourself. Obviously, they're fun to do with people as well, but it is, compared to like a movie, it's a small commitment to do on your own, maybe between things. The posters are free, and the poster image is fantastic.
Just one thing or a couple of things I'll say. If you've been to the gallery before, it typically has a kind of a sort of a sub-Antarctic kind of air temperature, but because these are all the reason for the temperature is it's everything's got to be temperature controlled for to preserve the condition of these extremely fragile, often old artworks. But Rhys, because it's all his work, he was like, can we bump the temperature up? So it's an ambient temperature. It's a welcoming temperature.
I think I noticed that today, yeah.
And also, Rhys was quite adamant that he wanted to have a lot of furniture in the space to encourage people just to sort of sit down, look, you know, feel comfortable physically.
Usually galleries are a bit almost like a drive-through, like move through like a flight centre, go in and sit here and feel a bit uncomfortable. But this one, yeah, I tried to make it couches and
quite informal.
Yeah,
and especially if you sit in the middle of the middle room, you can rotate, and you just spend 20 minutes on that chair finding a new thing to look at every couple of minutes, and it's fantastic. And I love there's a wide variety of sizes as well, canvas wise. We talked about the big ones, but there's also some smaller paperworks there as well. I think some of them, I love, there's a simplicity of the one, man falling into void or something. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah, undulating body in the abyss.
undulating body in the abyss. And I looked at it, I was like, oh, that's a strange one. And then I looked at the title and I was like, hmm.
Yeah.
I felt quite sad looking at this one. Again, it's a very fun exhibition. Go along.
Yeah, and the book's out.
The book's out, so you can't, listeners won't see this, but they might hear just there's how many pages
being flipped.
So there's a lot of pages, you know, we made this big book, and so the show is, you know, sort of one outcome of the fellowship, and the publication is another outcome of the fellowship. So it's not a catalogue of the exhibition, it's more of a document of the year's practice, would you say, Rhys?
Yeah, and a lot of the on just what's happening in the world and in Dunedin. Nick's done a piece on Dunedin in relation to my work.
So there's image-rich, but then, yes, so we've got writers who are contributing.
Richard Fahey and Madison Kelly and Pew Pew, my ture as well.
And it is good. The printing on it is gorgeous.
So printed by Gilbert May, Point Studios here in Dunedin.
So if you want... that might have been offensive, I should. But if you want a coffee table book that'll really get people, you know, like, oh, that's lovely.
Yeah.
It is that kind of kind of thing. It is gorgeous. And these blue ones, again, every time I see them.
It's a fold out.
Oh, and they're all there. Yeah. Oh, you've got to see the book. Yeah. Find the book.
So the book is that's a test print. The book will be available for viewing at the exhibition, and we will have we're taking orders, and we'll have copies available extremely soon. We've got some. We've got the first batch in today, and the next batch of copies will be in soon.
And there's other stuff in here that I didn't see in the exhibition. That is, I loved this. You can't see it. I mean, we're just looking at pictures now. But go see it, and you'll know what I'm talking about. There's a what could be a shoe, made up of various patterns that I spent maybe 10 minutes looking at in the exhibition. It's that kind of exhibition. Yeah. Yeah. Again,
I realise that looking at the book, there's a lot of boots and shoes, and Nick's writing sort of references me walking around Dunedin. So it's a nice little thing that happened.
Yeah, and you don't know what you're interested in until suddenly you see, oh, there's a lot of shoes in my work. Awesome. Well, thank you again so much for coming and talking to me. And thank you for letting me know about the exhibition, because again, I had a great time.
So it's on till the show is on for quite an extended period, until 1st of August. So the gallery's open Tuesday to Saturday, 10 till 5. Get along. It's free.
Yeah, and yes. Everything at the Hocken, the exhibitions at the Hocken are often, if not always, free, which is a privilege. to have that sort of resource there. So get along, everyone. And thank you so much for talking.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcast.